Welcome to the British Beard Ground Breakdown for the final time in the 2021 NFL season. The Cardinals season is over and all that is left now to do is dissect what went wrong, what we can do going forward, and also maybe hand out a few awards here and there. Because, well, this episode doubles up as a season recap slash award show. As always, I'm Tom, and I'm joined by Callum as we also host the 2021 British Beard Ground Breakdown Awards, whilst also having a breakdown over what might have been. At least there's always next year, though.
Definitely in a less festive mood than last year. You know, I think last year we were joking about getting some tuxes to host this, even though it was it's obviously only on audio. But yeah, this year I think I don't know. I'm just not feeling it after the way that our season ended. It's difficult to get too excited. But that being said, I mean, we do have some positive awards to give out. I think there's some positive things to look back on in the season and to build on in the future. And we've got news and we've got season review and we've got awards to give out. Like, what more can you want?
I know it's like a bumper episode of the podcast. What more can people ask for?
I will say we're recording right now as the AFC Championship game sort of is building up to getting underway, and this year watching the playoffs has made it all sorts of more painful. So I think we're both using it as a good excuse to not have to watch that just now. But we have our news to bring you. So should we get on with the news, Tom?
Yeah, I mean, obviously there's been a while since we've had our last podcast, and there has been some news breaking on a couple of fronts. So. Mm-hmm. It's actually a pretty packed news segment this week.
Yeah, it's it's a combination of it now being sort of postseason, basically, for the Cardinals anyway, and it also being, you know, a couple weeks. But yeah, we do have our usually curt news segment is bursting this week.
Well, I mean, we say it's news, like a couple of them may not actually be news anymore just because, you know, developments recently have probably proven them to be useless, but I suppose I wrote them down on a document. We may as well talk about them for a little bit.
Well, I suppose like it's always worth discussing them because, I mean, the biggest thing that's happening here is the kind of coaches merry-go-round. And the big question has been how much of the Cardinals coaching staff is away elsewhere. Fortunately, the Fire Cliff Brigade didn't get Cliff Kingsbury's head on a silver platter. So that means that, you know, from our point of view, we weren't making any big changes towards the coaching staff, but indeed the various, what would you call them, second level coaches have been headhunted. They've been interviewed by other big teams.
Of the 32 teams, were 9 people looking for new jobs, you know, head coaches. So,
I mean, that's pretty chunky amount of people, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's only usually like maybe like 4 or 5, but this year we've got 9 teams clearing house, and thankfully Twitter didn't get their wish for the Cardinals to be made number 10.
Yeah, absolutely. But the Cardinals did very nearly lose their defensive coordinator.
Well, obviously, you know, we have the ancient LeBron James meme of him doing that back in the day. But, you know, our yeah. defensive coordinator could have been heading to Miami to fill the Brian Flores-sized hole left in their organization.
Yeah, it could have been just the right job for him in a way. You know, it's Vance Joseph has definitely had his, you know, bad moments in Arizona, but overall he seems to be putting together something good. And, you know, I think there's a lot of people who would agree that it's about time for him to get his own head coaching gig.
Well, at least a second run at it, because, you know, he was at Denver for quite a while.
That is true, yeah. But to get himself set up properly.
I mean, there was a point in the running where he was seen as a favourite to be the next head coach of the Miami Dolphins. Although then news came out earlier this week that other coaches were getting second interviews with the organisation, and Vance Joseph's name wasn't amongst them.
It's always interesting to me how these things get like so leaked, you know, publicly announced.
Yeah, I mean, like literally all the insiders on Twitter seem to know before everyone else when it comes to coaches, doesn't it?
I guess maybe because some of the teams are companies, they have to, you know, list these changes that they're making. But yeah, it seems almost pointless to do it in any way secret now because, yeah, as you said, all of the Twitter insiders seem to get it. But yeah, it doesn't look like Vance Joseph is off to Florida particularly. But, you know, I believe it's still open potential, right?
Yeah, I mean, and there's nothing finalized just yet. I don't think they've keyed in on a single person, so who knows? And maybe he didn't get a second interview because his first interview was that good.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, you know, sometimes they need to bring you back, and sometimes if you've said all the right things, like, what's the point in bringing you back? But yeah, indeed, I think, as I said, like, he's had his ups and his downs here in Arizona, but given that he has been, you know, producing some really good defensive football through the year, I think it would be a shame to lose him.
I think it would be a shame to maybe lose the other guy who's second on our news agenda this week.
Yeah, indeed. Adrian Wilson, obviously, you know, Cardinals Ring of Honor member and ex-player, been around the club basically since they left, I believe. And yeah, he seems to be on the GM circuit of all things.
Yeah, I mean, he's been working his way up the Cardinals organization since he retired. Like, he was a scout, and he's been like director of scouting, and then he's moved on to like player personnel. I think he's now vice president of player personnel or something, some fancy name like that.
Yeah, he seems to be doing pretty good stuff. It's one of those names that doesn't come up so often because, I mean, I guess when you get to back of house, people generally stick to just speaking about Steve Keim and Michael Bidwill. But, you know, as I said, he's been like a fixture of the Cardinals. And I do think there would be something really interesting, or, well, I don't think it would be unique, but I think it'd be interesting to see an ex-player on as a GM and, you know, negotiating with players in that way.
Yeah, I mean, he did get a interview with the New York Giants along with another member of the Cardinals front office whose name escapes me. And I didn't bother to look up who it was.
Yeah. I mean, it's worthwhile, I guess, you know, sort of following up on these opportunities because I guess, you know, for us as Cardinals fans, these are the ones that are going to matter less to us, but they are going to affect the organization in a tangible way.
Well, yeah, I mean, obviously, maybe he's been like molded by the organization to maybe one day take over from Steve Keim, you know, should that ever happen.
I mean, I suppose like that's the other thing, isn't it? Is that these could be being used as a tactic on his part to kind of say like, well, you know, let's get me up there a little bit faster, shall we?
And I mean, there were reports on Twitter as well that he could be heading to Jacksonville with them apparently interested in Tampa Bay offensive coordinator Byron Leftwich, where apparently he would only take over in Jacksonville if the Cardinals, who own the team, fired Trent Baalke and installed Adrian Wilson as their new GM.
That makes sense because they've worked together before, right, in the Cardinals.
I mean, I suppose in a way they have, although, you know, we can't really talk about Byron Leftwich being at the Cardinals for that long because
it was
kind of disastrous.
It was a one and done sort of thing, but I mean, yeah, I feel like that's a bit of a reach as an offensive coordinator asking for a new GM for you to come in, but maybe it's designed to be like a, you know, a poison. I don't know what's that called, like an impossible task, a wild goose chase.
A poison chalice, is that the one?
Yeah, maybe. Like, but just like I think Jacksonville overall is a poison chalice, but more the idea of if you're Byron Leftwich and you want to say no without saying no, you go like, okay, yeah, sure, I'll do it, but like, I really, really want to have you know, Byron. I would really want to have A-Dub as the GM, kind of knowing that it would never happen.
Yeah, and I mean, there was news today about them apparently keying in on, I think it's San Francisco offensive coordinator Mike McDaniel to be their next head coach. So, you know, it's not going to be a case of losing Adrian Wilson either. So no compensatory picks for us next year, sadly.
We do have a couple this year, though, so we'll save that for our pre-draft episode, I guess.
Yeah, but it's a thing with the NFL these days where I think if you have like a minority coach promoted to like head coach or like in the front office, you earn, I think it's a couple of third round compensatory picks, like one each year.
Yeah, it's not bad. Fair enough. But yeah, out from back office and out from coaching and into speaking about players, some more recent news that Larry Fitzgerald has crowned himself a former athlete.
Yeah, perhaps we maybe have the confirmation now that Larry Fitzgerald is done in the NFL with the recent creation of his official LinkedIn profile, has him listed as a former athlete for the Arizona Cardinals, also a philanthropist and investor. So, Larry, you know, if you're listening, we're seeking investment in the British Birdland, so hit us up.
Get some angel investment from Larry Fitzgerald. It'd be lovely. He's listed himself as obviously former athlete, and not just that, but he put his work experience at the Cardinals down and gave it an end date in January 2021. So, I mean, we were always speculating that he would go quietly, but the idea of taking like an entire season before you even make a post, which is sort of implying that you're retired, is more quietly than I would have suspected.
Yeah, I mean, there's low key and then there's this. It's like, the hell?
Absolutely. But you know, I think that kind of fits his style, to be honest.
Well, yeah, obviously, I think he always said he didn't want any of the big show, did he? You know, like when he retires, it was just going to be, that's it, I'm done. And so maybe that is the case.
I mean, like we've spoken about it for years, it would have been lovely to send him out with a Super Bowl. But, you know, obviously that's not happening this year. And if it had happened, you know, next year or the year after or so on, then there's a certain point where you really do start to become a liability. And some would argue that already happened previously, but you know, there's a definite liability if you're going to go and play wide receiver when you're 40 or something.
Well, yeah, exactly. You know, maybe he's just listed himself as a former athlete because he no longer considers himself as athletic.
I think he's still in about the golf. That's still quite athletic.
Yeah, I mean, he's still kick our ass in anything he tried to do anyway, so we shouldn't say too much.
Yeah, unbelievably fit. But no, in fact, that does appear to be truly the end of Larry Fitzgerald, putting another nail in the coffin of all the people who were kind of expecting him to suit up midway through the season and come in and save a game somehow.
And it's also the end of our new segment as we move on to something a lot more important and interesting.
Yeah, as you said earlier, Tom, this episode is going to cover both our season recap and the awards. And I guess we can kind of do a little bit of both as we go along.
Yeah, I mean, obviously we'll combine the two, you know, sort of somehow, in some sort of way, we'll manage to do something. And hopefully
we'll be chill, we can get through it. But yeah, the British Bird Gang Breakdown 2021 awards and the season recaps. I guess, do we usually start with the negative ones? I know we're going to start with the negative ones this year, but is that a usual thing for us?
Yeah, I think we always do because I always put them to like awards at the start of the thingy and then work the way down thing, to like, yeah. So mate, why change what isn't broken or whatever. Whatever the word is.
Yeah. Well, I think let's just get ourselves kicked off with the most confusingly named award, which we continue to have, which is obviously the GOAT of the season, meaning the British sense of GOAT, as in like somebody who didn't work out, somebody who just was a big disappointment, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, obviously we've done it so long, people are still confused by it, and I don't know why.
I mean, definitely within the context, you read that and you go like, especially as it's such an early question. But I can't get how people don't get it when they look at the contenders for it, you know?
Well, yeah, exactly. Speaking of the contenders, we've got for the go to the season 2021. The nominees were AJ Green, Josh Jones, Chandler Jones, Breon Borders, Zaven Collins, and cornerback Tay Gowan.
A motley crew, if ever there was one.
Yeah, I mean, it's just, you know, who do you choose from that? I mean, some of them, you know, played a lot. Some of them didn't play at all. Some of them never even saw the single field once and ended up traded to Philadelphia.
This is an odd one because it really comes down to how you want to define it for yourself personally. Like, what really means, you know, the GOAT of the season? Because I think with each of them, you could probably make an argument for why they were, you know, why they deserved the award. And in fact, that's kind of reflected in the voting because we got quite an even spread of votes.
Yeah, I mean, in third place, we have 20.7% of the vote was Tay Gowan. In second place, by just one vote, and with 25.1% of the votes cast, was Chandler Jones. But the winner, with 25.7% of the votes cast, is a guy that did not turn around and also had his fair share of drops. But also, let's not forget, there were many big plays made by him as well. And that is, of course, AJ Green.
I gotta say, I don't particularly agree with that as a winner. You know, I think I get it. I definitely get it. I think AJ Green's lowlights were some of the hardest parts of the season. Like, you know, if you change like three AJ Green plays, I think we win, you know, two more games at least. But that's not to say like he didn't have his moments.
I mean, I feel like there was so many times
pretty solid throughout much of the year.
Yeah, I mean, there were so many times, you know, we had him catching, like making a really good catch down the field, you know, making a big play when we needed it. But then there were also those plays, you know, the one Green Bay didn't turn around. There was the one where he stepped out of bounds, yep. The one where he fumbled out of bounds when he didn't catch the ball. You know,
yeah,
a mixed bag all over.
I think it's hard as well because you're kind of looking at him in the context of DeAndre Hopkins a lot of the time. And then especially when Hopkins got injured as well, we were kind of expecting him to come in and pick up the mantle, as it were, and he never really did. You know, the ball kind of got spread around a lot in that time.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, if you're going to try and compare the two, you know, it's not really going to be like a fair comparison, is it though, between the two of them?
Yeah, exactly. And you know, I don't know. I think it's a really tough one because he's definitely like disappointing. But was he the GOAT? Yeah. Like I understand it, but I think that some of those other players might be a bit more deserving. And I think as well, Chandler Jones in second place. You know. Because he set his bar so high in week one, and then, you know, it was a bit more neutralized after that. But again, he really had his games.
Can we save the disappointments though? Because, you know, we've got a bit more to talk about in the disappointment front.
That is true. Yeah, we've got an actual award, which is an award for specific disappointment of the year, which is more related to broad concepts than it is specific players. And obviously there's been a lot to be disappointed about this season, but Tom managed to narrow it down to some contenders. So he has written playoffs, K2's second successive mid-season collapse, injuries to Nook and JJ, losing to Detroit, Zaven Collins bench boy, Malcolm Butler retirement, and AJ Green not turning around. Which I think is a good selection, you know, that kind of encapsulates quite a lot of the different things to be disappointed about this year. And again, you know, quite a lot of spread in the votes, but the winner did get a sizable chunk.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, in third place, we had, with 16.2% of the vote, we had that sorry excuse of a playoff run the Cardinals put together.
Yeah, yeah.
In second place, with 19.6% of the vote, was AJ Green not turning around. And the winner, yes, obviously, we've seen the graphic on Twitter that many times, is Cliff Kingsbury's mid-season collapse, which 43% of people voted for.
Yeah, I mean, it really is. Like, it's the, I guess that that's the closest thing to being able to vote for the disappointment of the season as a whole.
Yeah, I mean, like, obviously, there was some highs in the season, but, you know, we'll talk about them later because, you know, we've got so many more awards to get through, but disappointment, you know. Where do you begin?
Yeah, I mean, I think for me, so I'm thinking about what I was voting for from this group, and my biggest temptation was actually to vote for losing to Detroit, and then I remembered that we're the Cardinals, and of course we're going to lose to some little team that we should be beating in straight sets. But I think for me, I ended up voting for specifically the playoff run because, you know, I think I can handle losing in the playoffs. We've done it before, but I would have liked to see just some, you know, level of life in that game.
Yeah, I think it didn't help as well. You know, we like literally limped into playoffs, didn't we? You know, like,
oh, we had really
all those
did,
losses
yeah.
in the way, lost players. Yeah. It was just not good. Not good football being played.
Well, I mean, do you remember sort of midway through the season? This was related to the mid-season collapse as well. But like at a certain point, I can't remember exactly which game, we were sort of at the stage of like, okay, if we win this game and somebody else loses, we get in the playoffs. And the next week it was like, okay, we just need to win the game and we're in the playoffs. And that just continued on, you know, and eventually got to the point where I think we got into the playoffs via someone else losing. And we were into the wild card round, you know, when we could have been looking at a few weeks before, we could have been looking at a home field advantage in the, you know, later rounds.
Well, yeah, I mean, like, it was, I think it was probably the start of December. We had a 95% chance of winning the West,
which is just wild. And then just didn't, you know, no hats, just no t-shirts.
Nothing. I mean, it's just mental, like, what happened. I mean, clearly everyone on Twitter seems to think the only reason for that collapse is Cliff Kingsbury because, you know, it's happened before. Every single year, allegedly.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I would love to see the reasoning behind why it's specifically Cliff Kingsbury's fault. But, no, I think, you know, it is a hugely disappointing collapse after such a strong start to the season.
I mean, yeah, obviously, you know, starting 7-0 and then like finishing what we did and then limping into the playoffs and then being one and done in the playoffs. It's like, you can see why people are disappointed in the season.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, I would almost rather in a lot of ways have had a, you know, a moderate season throughout. And then us not get into the playoffs, but kind of still go like, well, there was improvement to be had, you know, something like we had last year. I think that would almost be a less disappointing season than this one, where really, I mean, all of this disappointment comes from the hope of the first 10 weeks or so, right?
Yeah, I mean, like you just said, if it was a repeat of last year, you know, I'm not sure if people would have enjoyed that, though. To be honest, people have still been calling for Cliff Kingsbury's head.
Oh, yeah, people always will, though. For some reason, this particular fan base just, like, loves to be shouting about the fact that our quarterback and head coach are rubbish. But, you know, I think in terms of purely talking about disappointment, it has to be down to the fact that we did so well to start.
Yeah, I mean, I think like you said before we started recording, you know, had we flipped it around and, you know, like we had a bad-ish start, but then like went on a 7-game winning streak to end the season, people would have been a lot more happier with that probably.
Yeah, and I think if you combine that with then like, say, losing a close game in the playoffs or losing in overtime or something like that, you just have such a different mood to what you have now. Although even without having like changed the season record or whatever.
Yeah, but you know, like in saying that, maybe by mid-season we would have fired Cliff Kingsbury. Twitter would have got their wish after that start.
Yeah, it could have happened. It could have happened. But yeah, I mean, I guess we might as well kind of chat here about where do we actually think it went wrong? Because, you know, obviously we've been talking here and saying people on Twitter seem to think it's Cliff's fault and everything like that. But I guess, like, what is our opinion on why it all went wrong?
And I don't think it really did go that wrong, to be honest. I just think, you know, we came up against better teams who were better prepared, more up for the games, and just we couldn't match them. And then that was basically it.
My counterpoint to that would be losing to the Detroit Lions.
And they were up for it. They were 100% up for it.
That is fair. I don't think we were, though. You know, like, we're definitely not up for it. But, I think, for me, I think a big thing is rhythm in football is such a thing. You know, it's such a cliche to say, but it really is, like, rhythm and you know, getting that feeling and everything like that. And I think, you know, the loss of J.J. Watt played a big role in that for how the team all felt going forward. You know, I know we won some games after that, but then, you know, the injuries started to pile up and we lost, was it Rodney Hudson? We lost Rodney Hudson and all of that sort of stuff. And that's the kind of injuries that really can demotivate a squad. And I think for me that's where it all falls apart, because there's no point in time for the Cardinals to be able to reset and go, right, okay, we're back on it. We're all together. Everyone's healthy. Let's go. Because even, you know, after Kyler was injured and stuff, we were talking about him coming back after the bye week. And he just never really, you know, he wasn't able to come back with a healthy Rodney Hudson. He wasn't able to come back fully with a healthy DeAndre Hopkins or anything as well. And that, to me, I think really is the thing that killed the season in a lot of ways. But I agree that when we came back, we were also coming back to much stronger teams.
Yeah, I mean, like you say, the injuries just piled up, didn't they? And we just didn't have anyone capable of replacing the players. Like, obviously, there's no replacement for DeAndre Hopkins, no matter what you try and do.
Yeah,
the replacement for Rodney Hudson was Max Garcia, and he was absolute shite. So
yeah, and I think as well, you know, like we've spoken about it on the show before, but replacing a center is such a difficult thing to do because it's so tied up in the way that the entire offense plays, you know, in the snap counts and everything like that.
Yeah, and also helping Kyler call the line. Call the coverages, that sort of thing.
Yep, definitely. And I think you saw that when he came back. You know, you saw this immediate increase in quality of play.
He just wasn't up to the standard of, like, maybe his first 4 or 5 weeks again, though, once again.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. But yeah, I mean, unless you've got anything else particularly to say, I guess we can attempt to come up with the actual good things that we got out of this season.
Yeah, I mean, obviously we don't want to dwell on the negatives too much because this is the British Birdland Awards and they were meant to be a celebration of the season.
Yeah,
if there is anything worth celebrating.
No, I think there is stuff worth celebrating. We'll get through them because I do think, you know, ultimately, despite the fact that it was a very two-sided season, there was still a big improvement on last year.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, we can't forget as well the fact that this team won double-digit games this past season. But Absolutely. Which one was the best? Let's see what won the British Birdland Breakdown Award for Game of the Year. And the nominees for that were Week 1, Week 4, Week 6, Week 7, and then whichever numbers the Chicago and Dallas game wins came in.
It's a pretty solid set there. And I think, you know, stuff that's in week 1, 4, 6, and 7, I think that's going to be quite high in people's minds because that was, you know, in the time when we were in a winning streak.
That's when we were an unbeaten team and the best in the league, allegedly. Yeah. Sadly, that wasn't the case.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah, in terms of voting, it was pretty solidly one-sided, I would say, with week one game versus Tennessee coming in a very, very distant second with only 16.2% of the vote. And the winner... Go ahead, you announce the winner, Tom.
Yeah, go on. The winner was, with 72.6% of the vote, was the week four triumph over the evil Sean McVay and his Rams team.
I think I have to get on board with this one. Like, I mean, it was such a good game. It was such a good win. And finally ending that curse was just so worth it.
I mean, since that game, we are now again 0-2 against Sean McVay and his Rams. So, you know, let's not forget that part.
It's true, but it's better than being what would have been like 0-2. However many, and some embarrassing number against
11, them. I think.
Yeah, getting into double digits in a losing streak versus a division rival, that would sting.
You said we're only 1-10 now, so that's something at least.
Yep, exactly. But you know, it means that it's no longer a streak. The Cardinals went to LA to do that as well, which I think is well worth mentioning.
Yeah, and now sadly LA look to be on the cusp of making the Super Bowl in their own backyard. Either that or the San Francisco 49ers beat them.
Well, you know, I can only hope that if they do make it, that they have an embarrassing time like they did last time they went to the playoffs, or went to the Super Bowl, rather.
I mean, we can hope, but, you know, I certainly won't be watching. I'm done with the NFL for this season now.
I'll be watching, but only for tradition's sake. Yeah, I mean, any other particular games stand out for you, Tom?
No, I mean, obviously the week one game against Tennessee was probably, that was my choice, to be honest, other than the Rams game.
Yeah, I think in terms of a pure game, the week one game versus Tennessee, especially with the team that they, you know, proved that they were later in the season, I think that was the most exciting game overall, but the fact that it was against the divisional rival with the Rams and it was a beatdown, that's probably what wins it for me.
Yeah, I mean, I could take that, you know. At least one game won, that's one thing at least.
Yeah, exactly. One had to win. If I could nominate like a little wild card for like a little special mention, host special mention, Colt McCoy beating the Seahawks was a pretty special one for me.
Yeah, I mean, I could take that one as well. Although, on a counterpoint, Kyler Murray did then go and lose to Seattle, so
it's true. But I think just for me, I think the special thing of like them losing to a backup QB at home when we absolutely weren't favorites was a lovely little cherry on top.
Yeah, I mean, I could take. Should we move on to our next award, though? Because talking about games, you know, plays are made in those games, plays win games. So what about play of the year?
Yeah, play of the year, huge one. Lot of nominations for this one. Jonathan Ward's fake punt catch against Dallas. Byron Murphy interception versus LA. Zach Allen's fumble recovery touchdown. Eno Benjamin's angry run touchdown. James Conner's one-handed catches as a package, Antoine Wesley getting high but not in the Ricky Williams sense.
That's a good classic joke there from anyone that watched Channel 4's NFL coverage with Mike Carlson. One of his old favorites, that one.
Old school joke. But yeah, I mean, I think that was tough for you to cut down to such a list as well, because we did have quite a few standout plays this year.
I mean, to be honest, there were some that were missed out as well, like Rondale Moore's 77-yard touchdown against Minnesota.
I figured this one would be pretty hard to catch, actually, or pretty hard to call, because we didn't have there wasn't a Hail Murray this year, you know? There wasn't something which was going to get 90% of the vote.
I mean, to be honest, it did try to get nearly 90% of the vote, and it did run out to be pretty a unanimous winner. Let's be honest.
Yeah, indeed. Third place went to Eno Benjamin's angry run touchdown with just under 16% of the votes. Second place to James Conner's many, many one-handed catches with 18% of the vote. And the winner with 53% of the vote was the fake punt catch by Jonathan Ward.
Which still makes no sense how he caught that one.
Yeah, still didn't figure that out. It was like a helmet catch and a fake punt throw, and it was just everything all in one. Like that's all you need for a game of football in one play.
I mean, like you were saying that, you know, it might be one of the best catches ever, you know. But then I was watching, obviously, with the Tom Brady news, you know, that he may or may not have retired. He was showing the Julian Edelman catch in the Super Bowl. And yes. I just remembered how ridiculous that catch was. That's just insane.
Yeah, that was like, because I remember seeing that one and just like watching how he just keeps it an inch off the turf as well.
And like bobbles it as well whilst he's catching it as well. It's ridiculous catch. Like, that's definitely up there with like this one.
The great thing about the Julian Edelman catch that this one doesn't have quite so much is how clear all the camera angles were of catching it. Whereas with this one, I mean, you need to have a certain camera angle on to be able to sort of see that it's a catch at all. Otherwise, it looks like a broken up play.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, it was a crazy play. Like, even like at the time, like, why would you even call a fake punt in that situation?
Yeah.
And he did.
I think my favourite part of it is the fact that the refs actually caught it as a catch.
No, I think the refs originally called it for pass interference, didn't they? But then you had to take a look at it, and then it was overturned to be a catch.
So, yeah, it was one of the referees called it for pass interference, and then it was one of the side judges, I want to say, that was coming over and basically saying straight away, like, no, it's a catch, which is why they knew basically to look for that in the replay.
I mean, yeah, just a ridiculous play. Like, obviously not Hail Mary, like, levels, clearly.
No, I don't think it is, but, like, it will definitely be one of those plays that will be in a lot of clip shows, I think, going forward.
Yeah, they'll have, like, on Question of Sport, when you're like, what happened next?
Yeah, or I was thinking, you know, like, the NFL Network stuff where they go like, oh, top however many catches all time.
Top helmet catches, yeah.
Whatever they do to fill the dead air between the season ending and the season beginning.
They'll have the top 100 before long, won't they?
Yeah, they will do.
Silly countdown.
And speaking of top 100, we've got quite a few awards still to get through, so I should keep us moving along here, because we have sort of tied, I guess, to the play of the game, single game performance of the year award, of which we had the nominations: Chandler Jones 5 sacks against Tennessee, Kyler Murray's 5 total touchdowns versus Tennessee, Chase Edmonds versus LA, Colt McCoy versus Seattle, and James Conner versus San Francisco.
Yeah, and in third place, we had Kyler Murray versus Tennessee. Mm-hmm. In second place was James Conner versus San Fran. And in first place was Chandler Jones versus Tennessee, where he had his 5-sack performance to kick off the season.
I got to say, anything where you're hitting out 5 sacks like that, that's such a huge, huge achievement, like in and of itself.
Yeah, I mean, it's like last year. I think last year we had Hassan Reddick winning, didn't we, with the thingy?
Oh, that's true, actually. Yeah, we did, with his particularly like large number of sacks in one game.
Yeah, he had 5 sacks of his own, so, you know.
I think there's something about watching a defender who's really on it, going in and making all those tackles and making those sacks and everything like that. And I think that's... you know, like, as a fan, if it's your team, it's just satisfying to see.
Yeah, yeah. Obviously, you know, like, Chandler Jones just said, everyone was just hoping, you know, that was a sign of things to come this season. But then, come the end of the season, I think he only just about doubled that total for the rest of the way.
Well, I mean, he didn't get a single other sack for, like, 6 or 8 weeks after that.
Yeah, it put the kibosh on my sack race thing that I did. As the JJ Watt injury, but, you know.
Such a shame. But, you know, it's it's to be expected, I guess. And you know, Chandler Jones, I would say, you know, single game performances that he's put in have been phenomenal this year. But overall, his you know, season performance definitely had something to desire from that.
Yeah, I mean, like, it's not like he was terrible the rest of the way. Like, he got plenty of pressures on quarterbacks, you know, got a few hits in here and there, made a few tackles, and, you know, he just did what he does, just to get the sacks to show for it.
Yeah,
which is what most people, like, look for, isn't it, when they assess those sort of players?
I mean, pretty much, yeah. It's like, I guess that's the thing. That's the problem with having, like, one single metric that these guys are defined by, right?
Yeah, I mean, obviously the way there's way more to the game in that position than just sacks. It's just like,
yeah. Precisely, yeah. But you know, I think it is hard when you've shown that you can do five sacks in a game to then kind of come back to getting none for some time.
Yeah, I think it's one of those things though. It's like, what happens to Chandler Jones now? Do we keep him, or is he going to go elsewhere in free agency?
Yeah, I mean, that's really tricky. And I think a lot of it's going to come down to money negotiations, to be honest.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, like, obviously, after the week one game, he was there patting Steve Kamp's pockets, you know, saying to pay me.
Yeah, but absolutely.
He never did get paid.
I do think that he is a worthwhile player to keep on the roster based on him being, you know, a good, wise head who is, like, he's been on the team for a couple years. He's always put in production when he has been there. And, you know, given that, again, we've got no one immediately to replace him, I think we keep him on for now, right?
Yeah, but like you say, it just comes down to the money, doesn't it, though? Because it's going to cost quite a bit to keep him, I'd reckon, you know, at least 10, 12, maybe more, million a year.
Yeah, definitely. And I think, you know, you're going to have to balance it up with quite a lot of things in that regard. And it might genuinely come down to sort of the front office saying, like, look, Chandler, we'd love to keep you, but this has to be the highest number we can pay you. And, you know, if he does want more than he's worth, then ultimately we're going to have to say, like, well, we're just going to have to look elsewhere. We're going to have to go for maybe a less big name.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, like, obviously, if we don't pay him, someone else is going to pay him, aren't they?
Oh, yeah. I think there's plenty of teams who are absolutely desperate for, you know, linebackers and everyone else like that. So, they're gonna pay Chandler Jones somewhere. But equally, I guess for him, it's like, does he want to go and finish out his career in, like, New Orleans or somewhere?
Living there before, didn't he? Let's be honest.
Oh, yeah, that's true. Actually, I forgot. I just pulled a name out of my hat there, and I was like, oh, God, they've got no money. They've got negative money.
Try Jacksonville, you know, they're always...
Yeah, yeah, Jacksonville, that's a good shout. But yeah,
possibly even Cincinnati.
Yeah, actually, Cincinnati's a shout. Jacksonville would just be following Calais Campbell's footsteps, but yeah, we'll see. We'll see. I would like to keep him around based on you know, I don't think he's had a bad enough season to where I've lost all faith in him. But as I said, it's really going to come down to, like, how much money do you want? And if it's too much, then that's going to have to be it, unfortunately.
Well, suppose now we finished talking about Chandler Jones, you may as well look at the British Birdgang Breakdown Player of the Year Award, which obviously goes to the player with the most British Birdgang Breakdown Player of the Game Awards. And we have a tie in this one. Or rather, we have two ties in this one.
I quite like this award because it's voted for by everyone basically throughout the season. You know, it's like, who's the favourite at any given time? And because of that, there was quite a lot of spread, you know, and not just a season where it's either all Kyler Murray or all Andy Lee.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, honorable mentions to the ones with a single award to their name, and they are Chandler Jones, Rondale Moore, Byron Murphy, Marcus Golden, Colt McCoy, Buda Baker, Matt Prater, and Andy Lee, just for old time's sake.
Yeah, which is a like pretty solid roster there. And, you know, I can almost think of like the game that each of them won that with. Obviously, I think Andy Lee won it on a pretty miserable game, but everyone else, I can pretty much like put it down to a single play or a series of plays.
Yeah, so the important part now is who finished second and who finished first. And in second place, well, joint second place, with two awards apiece, we have Zach Allen and JJ Watt. But in joint first place, with three awards apiece, we have both Kyler Murray and James Conner.
I think that's like a really interesting way of showing it. You know, it's like of all the people on the team, you know, I would say that James Conner had such a huge part to play in the games that did go well. And Kyler Murray, obviously, you know, just continues to be a really good addition at quarterback.
Yeah. You know, this might be the only thing that Kyler Murray wins this year. Or it could also be the only thing James Conner wins. Spoiler alert, though, it isn't the only thing James Conner wins.
Yeah, I do. I also love to see Zach Allen in there with two, because you know, as I think I said last week, Zach Allen's kind of becoming one of my favorite players at the moment.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, really good season from him. Not quite. I mean, I'm not going to spoil any more reports later in the show, but you know, he does get mentioned again later.
Yeah, and as for JJ Watt, you know, the fact that he was able to get in with two, you know, despite not playing, you know, two thirds, three quarters of the season, I think that's quite sort of testament to what he was able to do when he was around.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, like, obviously, you know, like you said before, it's one of those awards that just progresses throughout the season. And, you know, even though I think Kyler Murray should have had a few more player of the game awards to his name, but he just didn't because people didn't vote for him.
Yeah. I think, I mean, he was second more often than anyone else, though, for sure. Like, he was quite often a close second.
Yeah, always the bridesmaid, never the bride.
Yeah, exactly. Although still three times the bride, and still technically winner of that one, despite the fact it was a joint winner.
And of course, before we get back to the awards, we have the administration of the Tom versus Callum versus the World competition to check on.
Yeah, indeed. So this was a set of predictions that Tom, you and I both made at the start of the season, and we also asked the British Bird Gang in general to predict a whole bunch of stuff with us. And we took those stats, we crunched them down, and we were now we can see who was the best predictor of the year, I guess.
Yeah, I mean, I've obviously tallied it up, like correct score scored one. Anything with a spot on got 2 points. So,
yeah,
you know, seemed to be a fair way of scoring it with, you know, just how it ended.
Yeah. And given people like the kind of, we've got scores for who did it best of all. Did we go through the final actual numbers for these yet?
We didn't know, but I suppose we can skim through them now. Especially like the two spot on ones, because they're probably the most impressive ones.
Do you wanna hit us out with the spot on ones as a, you know, specific one?
Well, I mean, I don't want to brag because I got Kyler Murray's interceptions total spot on with 10 for the season.
Yep. And actually the aggregate score of the British Bird Gang got a spot on for the number of Chandler Jones sacks throughout the season with 10.5.
Yeah, I mean, that's just crazy, isn't it? Like, considering how many people we actually got the scores from, for them, I mean, it was a few spot on, it's just...
Yeah, it was a few hundred as well. And actually, I didn't get a single one spot on of all the predictions. Yeah. I got a few correct, though, so I'll take it.
Yeah, I mean, in the final scores, we had correct. I had 7, Callum had 5, and the world had 2. But Callum and the world are both tied on 3 of them apiece. Myself and the world had 1 spot on each, which made the final score Tom 9, Callum 6.5, and the world 5.5.
Which I think's not too bad. overall. I'll take it for sure. I mean, it does mean you're the winner of the predictions challenge.
I mean, what can we expect, you know?
So rather than us going through all of these stats, shall we just say that you'll pop it out on the Twitter and people can keep an eye out for it there?
Yeah, I mean, I can post it up, you know, show everyone how great of a predictor I am, how bad of a predictor they are, you know, why not?
I think the fact that everyone got some is always pretty good. And in the same document that we've got that, we've got our player of the game Roll of Honor as well, so you can keep an eye out for that. Which is pretty interesting, I think, because you can see all the percentages of the votes there as well.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, if we wanted to be a bit picky, we could maybe have said, like, in the result of a tie, the ones with the bigger winning percentage would have won the award, but that would mean Carmel wouldn't win anything, so I decided not to do that.
No, I think it's the award that we've got is the most player of the game awards, so that doesn't take into account percentage particularly.
Because before we get back to the awards, we have the same one that we had last year brought back again, and that was the score for how would you rate the 2021 Arizona Cardinals, scoring from 1 to 10. Obviously,
it's a really interesting question, this, and I think like it super depends on the like last couple of games, right? Like that's the big thing that changes people's opinion about these.
Yeah, I mean, like obviously we had the weird ones who decided to vote for like 1, 2, or 3, and it's like I'm pretty sure a playoff season does not warrant a 1, 2, or 3 score.
Yeah, I mean, we spoke about it last episode, but you know, I think getting into the playoffs after the absolute collapse that the Cardinals had, like, you know, the past 4 years or something like that, definitely warrants, like, for me, more in the region of like 7, even if we didn't do that well.
Yeah, I mean, I think mine was 7. I'd have gone like 7.5, that sort of range.
Yeah, but almost 8. Almost 8, maybe.
Yeah, but like, obviously, averaging out every single score, you know, it worked out to be a 6.5 out of 10 or thereabouts.
Which at least is above 5. You know, I think at least the average came out above 5, but it definitely seems low for me.
I was trying to find what the thingy was for last year, you know, for comparison reasons, but then I remembered you did all your maths jargon that bored me to sleep. So I didn't make a record of that, but I was hoping you might have had it.
I might have it somewhere nearby, but I don't have it to hand, that's for sure.
Disappointing. Because, I mean, it would have been interesting to see, like, what people scored that season where we missed out on the playoffs to this season where we actually made the playoffs, but maybe we shouldn't have made the playoffs.
Hang on. I've got the British Bird Gang 2020 responses here.
Yeah, but do you have all your mathematical calculations to hand as well?
No, but I can actually very quickly now tell you that the average score of the entire of last season was 6.1.
Oh, so we did improve by 0.4.
We did technically improve, but like very, very slightly. But yeah, I think that has something to say there about, you know, like the last couple of games and the positivity people had going into it, because we were not really in playoff contention at all last year.
Yeah, I mean, like, obviously, then we lost out the last two games. Had we won one of them, we would have been in, but not to be.
Yeah.
But that's last year's news. Let's not talk about that.
It is. It's last year's news. But yeah, I would have definitely said that this season would warrant over a 0.4 increase. But yeah, as you said, it's not what people seem to go for. But yeah, we do also have an award this year for best new addition of the Cardinals roster.
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't really need much explanation, does it? It was a guy who wasn't on the team last year, but he's on the team this year.
Yeah, pretty much. And obviously, sort of huge, huge swing in this one. Of note, I would say, is Rodney Hudson coming in second place with about 30% of the vote. But with over half the votes, one guy really took it over.
Yeah, and that was James Connor, who, of course, you know, wasn't here last year, was here this year. Therefore, yeah. Makes him a new addition.
It's true. And I got to say, you know, he made such a huge impact on the team as a whole.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, there were other nominees in this one. There was Zach Ertz, Rodney Hudson, JJ Watt, AJ Green, Robert Alford. I mean, I'd call him a new addition, even though he was technically here last year. He was here on a new contract.
Yeah.
I mean, he never got a vote anyway, so it doesn't make much difference.
I think, Matt Prater got a couple votes. And I think in another season, he could have got himself right up there.
Yeah, and then there's also Colt McCoy because, you know, our backup Supremo, who is now the owner of Seattle. So congratulations to him.
Absolutely. And I think he got a vote as well somewhere in there. So
yeah, I think he's got that little tiny sliver you can see on the pie chart. That's Colt McCoy.
Eeny weeny sliver. But yeah, I mean, I guess there's not really much to say about that because you know, outside of it just being a new addition, James Connor was like one of our players of the year overall.
And I mean, yeah, we got to save our James Connor content for later in the show as well. So let's use it all now.
Rodney Hudson, I will mention Rodney Hudson now because I do think that he made a big difference at center. You know, as this is coming from somebody who was a big A.Q. Shipley fan, but the experience that he brought and the cool head that he brought was clearly a difference maker, if you ask me.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, without him, you know, who knows what that offensive line would have looked like.
Yeah, definitely. A bit more of a fractured category, as it were. We've got breakout player of the year. So this is obviously somebody that's a bit more ill-defined. You can't just say it's somebody who wasn't here last year, but is here this year. This is more for a player who kind of was maybe having a quieter year last year and has like really come forward this year and made something different. And the nominees were Zach Allen, Isaiah Simmons, Robert Alford, Jalen Thompson, Chase Edmonds, and Byron Murphy.
I mean, that's where I've always got Chase Edmonds in this category because, you know, it always seems like he's breaking out in a way. But then he never fully breaks out, so therefore he can be still used next year in the category.
Yeah. It's an interesting one, but yeah. What's your take on the winners then?
Well, I mean, in third place we had Byron Murphy with 20.7%. In second place with 21.8%, which is two votes between the two, it was Zach Allen. But the winner, with fairly convincingly, with 40.8% of the vote, was Jalen Thompson. And I mean, you can't really argue with him being the breakout player because, you know.
Nah. In some ways, like, I forgot partway through the year that he was having a breakout year. You know, just he seemed so calm and confident that it was like, oh yeah, this is just what he does always, right?
Yeah, I mean, you know, last year he was pretty much derailed by injury throughout. So,
yeah,
like, he'd look really good in games and then he'd get hurt and then not play for like a few weeks. So it was like this season he came back. I think he maybe missed a few snaps here and there, but he was pretty much like an ever-present on the field and it definitely showed throughout the year.
And just really looking like a solid option who's going to be with us for a while.
I mean, yeah, definitely not bad for a fifth round pick in the compensatory draft as well.
Yeah, absolutely not. But no, just, yeah, really, really looking good. Again, big honorary mention to Zach Allen there, who I think, you know, had a really good year. Maybe less of like what you would call a breakout year, and maybe that's a little bit difficult to quantify again with his position, but you know, yeah, Jalen Thompson, how can you say it would be anyone else?
Yeah, and I mean, obviously Byron Murphy as well. You know, he made some strides this year. Like, he's definitely not the finished article, and he like still don't seem to know where best to use him. Like, is he on the slot?
Yeah.
Is he outside? It's like you need to figure that out, really.
Yeah, I do think that the right defensive game plan is going to be what's going to bring the best out of Byron Murphy, right? Because it's like, we were joking about this during the season, but like some weeks he would have an incredible game and then another week he would almost be a little bit anonymous. And I think a huge part of that is down to, just how good the game plan was for him.
Yeah, I mean, obviously sometimes, you know, if he's stuck in the slot, it's like the guys outside are getting beat, you know. We need, like, I think quarterback's one of those positions where we've got, like, questions over, like, who's going to be where, who's, like...
Yeah. I think that's the problem with a lot of this defense, right, is we've got a lot of guys who are like, oh, yeah, you know, they're a guy who can play anywhere. They play all these different positions. We'll move them around. And maybe what we need going into next year is for a DC to sit down and say, like, you know, whether that's Vance Joseph or not, but to get a DC to sit down and say, no, right, we're going to start putting guys into boxes. And it's, you will play these positions unless there's some reason for you not to, basically.
Yeah, I mean, I can hopefully you can do that because, you know, it definitely helped guys like Isaiah Simmons, who, you know, still we don't know where his position was. But like,
yeah, again, I think it would help development, you know, of all these players as well, because we're also in a way doing them a disservice. You know, like, I know we sort of say we don't really mind what they do when they come off of the Cardinals, but, you know, the fact that they could then go into another, you know, we could be ruining some of their later career by not giving them enough structure right now, I guess is what I'm saying.
Yeah, and I mean, before we move on from that one, I think Isaiah Simmons is hard done by in this voting because, you know, I mean, he's had his ups and downs, but like he's definitely played a lot more this season and he's looked a lot better for it. So I think he finished the season with like 100 plus total tackles, which, you know, we don't really get that huge too often, do we?
It's huge. And not just that, but he had some like huge single breakout games for me. You know, games when he was, because he was picking up strip sacks and he was doing all sorts of stuff like that. And as you said, just getting an ungodly number of tackles, most of them behind the line of scrimmage as well. So, huge progress, I think, from Isaiah Simmons. But again, you know, it's so hard to be considered for one of these awards as a defender because we just don't see your stuff as often. We don't see you doing your job until you're doing it badly.
Yeah, and I mean, like, maybe like if this was a vote like halfway through the season, possibly yeah, Isaiah Simmons was winning this award hands down. But since then, you know, Jalen Thompson's just shown up like every single week, you know, like he's hitting someone really hard, making a big play.
Huge highlight plays and you know, big plays that stopped big offensive movements, you know, and I think that that's something that Isaiah Simmons definitely did. But again, it's something you don't really see because so often it all falls apart in the trenches and then the QB will just make a rubbish throw. And then you kind of don't really see that the reason is that Isaiah Simmons was bringing pressure or Chandler Jones was bringing pressure or whatever it is. Whereas if you're Isaiah Simmons and you make a play on the ball, everyone sees it.
Yeah. Should we move on to the business end of these awards now, where we get onto the individuals?
It's the biggie, yeah.
Well, it's not quite the biggie just yet, but this is the one for the old fogies of the team, the Coffin Dodgers, whatever you want to call them.
Yeah, indeed, it is the veteran of the year.
Yeah, and this year the criteria for making the list was to have 10 plus years of experience in the league.
I think it was tricky with the Cardinals because, I mean, like this, we're a lot less old as a team now than we were a few years ago, but you've constantly got to redefine what old means in this team.
Yeah, I mean, there's no Larry Fitzgerald to get the token vote this year either, so.
Yeah. And gosh, I mean, there's a whole load of people who are up for this one. There's Andy Lee, Matt Prater, Corey Peters, Colt McCoy, JJ Watt, Rodney Hudson, AJ Green, Chandler Jones, and more.
Yeah, I didn't find the other two were, but yeah, it doesn't really matter because in third place we had Matt Prater with 12.3% of the vote. In second place, JJ Watt had 18.4% of the vote, but 49.4% 46.4% of the vote went to the winner, which was Rodney Hudson, which now gives you a chance to rave about how good he was.
Well, I mean, I think the main way to say how good Rodney Hudson was is how much we struggled without him. You know, it was when we had Max Garcia in at center, who, by the way, we should be fair to, is not, you know, like, that's not his job. He was doing something that wasn't his job, and he was having to concentrate on all these things. But, you know, Rodney Hudson was just such a calming presence, I think, at the line, and really brought the best out of the team when he was there. So I think it's a solidly deserving vote there for the winner.
Yeah, I mean, like, I've just had a look at the current AFC Championship game score, and it's not looking good for Cincinnati.
Oh dear. Cincinnati's about one of my last favourites in there, so.
Yeah, they're down 21-3.
Oh, and there's still a bit of the second quarter to go. That's not a good sign.
Perfect way to date the podcast.
Yeah, exactly. Like, very, very specific, you know, period. But yeah, as for the other two, as for JJ Watt getting 20% of the vote, I think a lot of that has to come down with the fact that he got himself healthy and got himself back for the playoff game. You know, it might have been all in vain anyway, but he clearly made an effort and also had a great run before he was injured. And then third place, Matt Prater. I mean, like, if anything else shows you that this was a good season, the fact that we got Matt Prater as such an upgrade, being that low down in this list, is an indicator.
Yeah, I mean, like, any other year, he could have actually won this award, given, like, how clearly many big kicks he made and, you know, how clutch he was when we needed him to be.
And I think, you know, Cardinals don't win quite as many games without him, and we lose some by even more.
Yeah, I mean, it's fair, you know, like, these veterans do have a place on the team, but so do the rookies, and that's who is next up on the award list.
Yeah, indeed. Much easier to define rookies, obviously, people who are in their first year with the team, or their first year of NFL football, rather. And the choices were Zaven Collins, Victor
Dimukeji.
Dimukeji. Every time I try, I'm just like, excuse me. Anyway, Victor Dimukeji, Ronald Moore, Marco Wilson, James Wiggins, and Bernard Sikovits. Obviously, some of those names we heard a bit more than others throughout the year.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, unsurprisingly, this turned into a two-way battle as our first round pick probably had about as many votes as he had meaningful snaps in the whole season.
Yeah, indeed. It wasn't a particularly exciting world for Zaven Collins, but of the two that we did hear a lot from, second place was Marco Wilson with 44.7% of the votes. And in first place, with a little over half of the vote, Rondell Moore, which I think that was always going to be a battle between those two, right?
Yeah, I mean, obviously you'd have hoped that Zaven Collins would have done something, but clearly not.
Yeah, I mean, in the context of the year, though, like, there's names that we heard there and there's names that we didn't. And yeah, again, yet another year of our first round pick making little to no impact. I mean, hopefully he turns around and starts making impacts next year. But yeah, not a huge amount of word from him. But then again, you know, it just goes to show that that Keim has a lot of skill when it comes to picking out guys who are going to make some big stuff happen, like, later down in the draft, because Marco Wilson was playing like a veteran throughout the year, had some incredible plays, and Rondell Moore was really showing himself to be like a player of interest for the future of the franchise, you know, coming some huge clutch catches, and in some ways was playing as wide receiver one when Hopkins was injured.
Yeah, I mean, the thing with Rondell Moore was, like, he came in and he's basically like what they wanted Andy Isabella to be, but better, which seems to be the
hugely case. Hugely.
With Marco Wilson, like, he was targeted a heck of a lot this year, and, like...
He was, yeah.
He gave up a lot of yardage, but, like, there's something there with him. Like, he just needs, like, obviously, he's been chucked in the fire right in the deep end this year, so...
Yeah, he's absolutely.
He's had to learn on the job, hasn't he?
Yeah, and I think, you know, ultimately, of course, you're going to give up a lot of yards when you're targeted that much, and... But the fact is that he never looked like he was collapsing. You know, sometimes you're watching a game and you can see that a cornerback just has nothing left in the tank, you know, and it's just like, if you throw at them, you're getting a guaranteed catch. And that never really happened with him throughout the year. He kept his composure really well, and just continued to play extremely, extremely well. And as you said, with Rondale Moore, you know, he really did come in and make himself a starter, make himself a valid starter, and produced some outrageous catches while he was at it.
Yeah, and I mean, obviously we have questions over what happens to Christian Kirk this year, and also AJ Green only being on a one-year deal, you know. It's definitely going to be opportunity for Rondale Moore coming into next season to, like, state the claim behind DeAndre Hopkins.
Yeah, I think that's... it's quite likely that would be the play that management would take, you know, unless either of them are willing to take a, you know, a reasonable deal, as it were, then I think we might be looking at, seeing a lot more Rondale Moore in the next couple of years, and hopefully he can continue to improve.
Next award we've got is for the special teams player of the year, because we have to remember that punters are people too, kickers are people too. Long snappers are people too, and I suppose even the gunners are as well.
I mean, yeah, it's you know, hugely important unit. It's very easy to forget about them. And yet another one that you only see when they're not doing well, or if they do something unbelievably good. And so we did, you know, we put up a fair few players. We put up Matt Prater and Andy Lee and Aaron Brewer, Bo Brinkley. We put up Zeke Turner, Andy Isabella, and Chris Banjo. But I think by the largest margin of any of the votes, not quite, but by a huge margin, we do have a clear winner.
Yeah, I mean, in second place, we had cult hero Andy Lee, and our winner of our playoff player of the game award, with 22.3% of the vote. But the winner was pretty unanimous with Matt Prater, as he received 69.3% of the vote.
Yeah, I mean, really solid. And we've kind of already spoken a little bit about how good Matt Prater was throughout the season. But, you know, generally being able to produce really, really consistent kicks when it was needed was just something that was really nice to be able to watch as a Cardinals fan.
Well, yeah, I mean, obviously, you know, we've had guys like Chandler Catanzaro and what's his name last year? Zane Gonzalez,
yeah. Which are obviously two, you know, huge, difficult. I think both of them got a bit of a raw deal because the team really wasn't built up around them to be able to, you know, do that successfully. But, you know, in the past couple of years, watching the Cardinals line up for a kick, especially if it was from, like, you know, 30 yards or something like that, quite often I'd just be like, just go for it. You've got more of a chance of, you know, going for it and getting a lucky catch than you have with making this field goal. Whereas with Matt Prater, you know, I was watching him line up at 50 yards away sometimes going like, yeah, I'm pretty sure this guy can do that.
Yeah, I mean, he seemed to, like, hit them for fun most of the time, didn't he, half the time?
Even that one game, was it versus Dallas that he was struggling when there was no long snapper for him?
Yeah, it was. It was that. That's why Bo Brinkley was named on this list. And I think he did get a single vote, which is, you know, fair.
Fair, yeah. But no, with the Dallas game, when he had a bit of a shocker and he was really, really struggling to hit anything, and then coming back from that the next week, and just producing some excellent kicks, that's, you know, it's a real mark of a professional.
I think we've talked enough about special teams, though, haven't we? We should move on to the positions that actually matter.
Yeah, indeed. Big three awards coming up, but first off, we've got our Defensive Player of the Year award, which, you know, again, lots of guys who could be quite easily eligible for that. We've got JJ Watt, Zach Allen, Chandler Jones, Marcus Golden, Jordan Hicks, Isaiah Simmons, Byron Murphy, Buda Baker, and Jalen Thompson.
In third place with 12.3% of the vote, we had Breakout Player of the Year winner Jalen Thompson. Second place went to Marcus Golden with 15.6% of the vote. But winning pretty convincingly is the Pro Bowler, second team All-Pro safety, Buda Baker, who got 50.8% of the vote.
Yeah, I mean, how can you not be coming in here and talking about a guy who has pretty much become the de facto leader of the defense, one of the biggest names on the Cardinals, a guy who's got tackles and interceptions and just huge pass breakup plays all throughout the season. Yeah, Buda Baker is just killing it out there, really.
Yeah, I mean, what more can you say about him, really? You know, it's, you know, he should have been first team all pro, but, you know.
Yeah, he definitely should have been, but unfortunately, so much of these things is a popularity contest, and it's also, I mean, safety is also a really, really tricky category for the Pro Bowl. There's a lot of good safeties out there, but I tell you what, I'm glad Buda Baker's on my team.
Oh yeah, absolutely. You know, it's like one of those guys you'd love to have on your team and you'd hate to be facing every week because he just makes plays, doesn't he?
Yeah, absolutely. As you said, making plays every week, and you know, whoever, if he's out in coverage, you know, whoever he's covering is just almost certainly not going to get the ball thrown at them unless they absolutely have to.
And if you do get it, you know, they're going to take a big hit, aren't they?
Yeah, he's really, really good for that. And I think that's, you know, something that's something that opposing teams notice, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's obviously something they're going to make sure they don't want the ball to come their way if Buda Baker's exactly. In the vicinity. It's like, yeah, exactly. Nah, not today, mate.
As for the other two, I mean, we've already spoken about Jalen Thompson, obviously, breakout player of the year winner there. We've not really spoken tonight about Marcus Golden.
Well, no, because I think this is like his first
nomination. But another guy who had a really, really solid year and, you know, a regular feature in the highlight plays.
And also a bargain for the year as well. I think he was only on like 2 million, something like that. And he's only on 4 yeah. million next year. So like steal of the century. Bargain.
Yeah, definitely. And I got to say as well, you mean those three out of the voting were the, you know, particular like standouts, I guess you could say. But yeah, a lot of guys doing a lot of good work on the defense, huge improvement in the last couple of years. And yeah, I think Buda Baker's been a big part of that, to be honest.
And the penultimate award is focusing on the other side of the ball as we found out who takes home the offensive player of the year. Preseason favorite and winner of it last year, Kyler Murray. You know, you'd expect him to win this, but maybe not.
Yeah, indeed. Kyler Murray was obviously nominated along with Chase Edmonds, James Conner, DeAndre Hopkins, Christian Kirk, Rodney Hudson, Zach Ertz, and AJ Green. But we do, in fact, have the largest winning margin of any vote so far.
Yes, you could call this one the Pac-Man Award, really.
It really does look a bit like a Pac-Man on the pie chart. Distant second place with only 15.6% of the vote is Kyler Murray.
I'm shocked.
It's pretty wild, actually.
Yeah, and the winner with 76% of the votes cast was James Conner again.
Yeah, huge year for James Conner, really. What a time that guy had. Police coming for me for that one as well. Huge year for James Conner, and obviously I think given what he has done throughout the season and the production that he's had, he's obviously become a bit of a fan favorite as well.
I think we should save some of this comment though, because of
I think we maybe should. Yeah, indeed. which you might be able to guess based on some of the chat that's happened up to this point. But in fact, we do have the British Bird Gang MVP Award. MVP, obviously, from anywhere on the team. It is the big award, the Mac Daddy. Basically, everyone that's been mentioned in the past couple of awards has been up for it. We've got Kyler Murray, we've got James Conner, Rodney Hudson, Chandler Jones, Marcus Golden, Jordan Hicks, Isaiah Simmons, and Buda Baker being the big players. But of course, there's only one person can win it.
Yeah, and in third place, we have 12.8% of the vote was our Defensive Player of the Year, Buda Baker. In second place, we have 26.3% of the vote, Kyler Murray, meaning with 50.8% of the vote and winner of yet another award, it's James Conner.
Or John Conner, as he's also known by certain commentators.
It's one of those, it'd be like the episode of The Simpsons where they win all those Grammys. Just basically James Conner.
Yeah. Oh man, he definitely swept up this year. And I got to say, if you were to show me that chart at the start of this year, I would have said like, well, what did that guy do that was so special throughout the year? And, you know, I think at some point being the NFL leader in touchdowns, producing just, you know, touchdown after touchdown, at least kind of won a game at a certain point with multiple a game on average. And also just producing, you know, so much good running and you know, really kind of brought me back to the, like, the one good David Johnson season from a few years ago.
And I can't believe you forgot the other thing James Conner did this year.
Which is, what, angry runs?
No, it's when he broke John David Crow's records.
Oh. Oh man, I can't believe you managed to squeeze that in right at the last minute. Yeah,
it's going to be in there somewhere.
Yeah, it is. It does. I mean, and yeah, I as you sort of said there, I you know, award winning, record breaking season, you know, making a season that's that high on the kind of Cardinals all time list, as it were. It makes sense to be in winning some of the big ones.
And yet he only did it on a one-year deal as well. So, you know, that's something that has to be rectified, I would assume.
Yeah, indeed. Well, I think that will be a big topic of our free agency podcast, which will be coming up at some point in the next month and a half or so.
Yeah. I mean, it is a bit strange with these awards, though, because, like, especially this MVP award, like, maybe when there was like maybe 100 or so people voting, it was almost neck and neck between James Conner and Kyler Murray. There's like maybe two or three votes in it.
Do you think James Conner got his family to come in and do the second half of the voting?
I think he must have done, you know. Or, you know, people just hate Kyler Murray just because he's small or something like that.
It's an odd one. It's an odd one. But yeah, indeed. Definitely something that's unexpected. I mean, that's usually such a dead cert for the quarterback.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like Kyler Murray had a terrible season, did he? It's like, you know, he missed a few games here and there, but so did James Conner.
It's true, yeah. I mean, he did get knocked out of the, like, full league MVP race at a certain point. You know, that stopped being a thing people spoke about. But I don't think, again, that was down to, like, lack of good play. I think it was just, like, the Cardinals weren't winning anymore.
Yeah, and I mean, obviously it's hard to win the MVP if your team's not winning. Because, like, no one's going to win.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But, yeah, I mean, what's next for James Conner as a guy who has a one-year deal, has clearly had a great season here in Arizona, kind of put pay to the people who had said he was done in Pittsburgh. And where does he go now? Does he try and get himself a really good deal somewhere else? Does he stay with the Cardinals because he feels like they can win something eventually? You know, who knows?
Yeah, it's one of those things, like, obviously we're not going to invest too much money in the running back position because I mean, there's also Chase Edmonds, who's a free agent this offseason. So do we keep both? Do we keep one? If we keep one, does it mean the second's gone anyway?
They were a really good team overall, the two of them together. But obviously, James Conner, when Chase Edmonds was injured, James Conner kind of proved that he could do it all.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, it's one of those things, like, they were good together as a tandem, and they were okay together when they weren't together, but, like, bringing them together was a good idea. So
it was,
if you keep them both at a reasonable price, I would say bring them both back.
Oh, yeah. I mean, that's the key. There's nobody really on the team who's up for big-time renewal that I'd be saying get rid of them for definite. You know, there's nobody I'd be like, unless, again, it all comes down to if they then ask for an absolute fortune.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those ones, like, where do we go next? Like, who's coming in, who's going? Like, does Zach Ertz stay here full-time? You know, after he had such a good, like, half season here, after we traded for him?
It's wild that he actually didn't win anything. I mean, I know it's partially down to the fact he was only here for half a season, but his half a season that he had with us was one of the best tight end seasons that's happened in Arizona's history.
I know, yeah, imagine that spread out across the whole season. He might have been breaking records and everything.
He would have been. Unfortunately, not Jim David Crow's records, but, you know, we can't all break those.
I mean, to be fair, I don't think we've had any tight ends making, like, historic records, have we?
Not really. I think he very nearly beat the club record, or he did beat the club record with his half a season. So, you know, having him stick around, again, you know, it all comes down to how much money do they want. And I guess that's something that we can discuss more in our upcoming free agency podcast.
Yeah, absolutely, because, you know, this is the end of the British Bird Gang Breakdown Awards for 2021. So, you know.
And it's kind of the end of our...
Yeah, for all those who did vote, you know, thank you for voting, you know.
Yeah, thanks very much to everyone who got involved. It really makes it much more fun than just Tom and I giving out awards arbitrarily.
Yeah, I mean, because obviously Kyle Murray would have won everything if it was up to me, at least.
and obviously, this is also kind of the end of our 2021 season of the British Bird Gang Breakdown. So if you've been listening along with us, I'd like to say thank you very much. It makes it, you know, all the more fun to be able to do this when there's people listening, and we do appreciate you when you do.
Yep, I echo those sentiments as well. And of course, as you said, we will be back at some time in the near future with our free agency, like, preview, whatever
we decide. It kind of just, it just depends once we kind of get the best clear picture of who is eligible for free agency, who's going up for it, like what the kind of moves can be made. Because otherwise, that's just idle speculation.
And of course, there is also the NFL draft coming up, where the Arizona Cardinals will have the 24th pick.
And a bunch of compensatory picks as well, so that's always good.
Yep, so obviously we'll have the mock drafts, all draft previews, all that sort of thing to come as well, so there's that to look forward to. Plus the post-draft extravaganza, where we break down everything we know about the people who we pick from the middle of nowhere.
Hey, there's always some fun stuff in there. And of course, we can continue to get overhyped about somebody that we picked in the first round who we'll see about four snaps through the year.
And then win no British Bird Gang Awards for 2022, which exactly. Is sad. But yeah, I think that'll do it for this week's episode of the British Bird Gang Breakdown. So as always, if you're not following us on Twitter, go follow us at British Bird Gang. If you're on Facebook, like us at facebook.com/BritishBirdGang. Join the group at facebook.com/groups/BritishBirdGang. Buy British Bird Gang merch at britishbirdgang.dmail.com. And of course, if you like what you listen to on the podcast, then leave us a review wherever it is you get your podcast from, and share it around with all your other Cardinals fans.
Yeah, indeed. And we will be back soon. And yeah, once again, thanks for listening, and we'll see you soon.
And now to date it even more, we will see that the Kansas City Chiefs are up at 21-10 at halftime. Exciting.
I'm going to go watch the second half of this and root for a Bengals comeback.
As long as they're getting within 7 points, I don't care.
Cover that spread. All right, I'll see you next time, everyone.
Until next time, thanks for listening and goodbye.
Goodbye.